Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Later in the show, we'll be joined by climate investigative journalist Ray Tackver to discuss her recent piece for DSmog, Trump Has Launched an Unprecedented Assault on the Environment. Where is the pushback? We will also ask today's first two guests about this. We are talking about the 37th Annual Bioneers Conference, Revolution from the Heart of Nature. It runs from Thursday through Saturday in Berkeley. Bioneers brings together activists, scientists, artists, educators, indigenous leaders, and community organizers who are working to address the most critical issues of our time. The goal of this year's Bioneers Conference is to reignite our shared energy, creativity, and commitment to change to build the future we want to see at a time when the Trump administration is gutting the United States climate infrastructure. Today, we are joined by two speakers. Leila Salazar-Lopez is executive director of Amazon Watch, an organization that works to protect and defend the Amazon rainforest in solidarity with indigenous and forest peoples. Amazon Watch turned 30 this month. For nearly 30 years, Leila has worked to defend human rights and the planet through international solidarity and advocacy campaigns at Amazon Watch, Global Exchange, and the Rainforest Action Network, where she joined the board of directors in 2023. Leila Salazar-Lopez will be on a panel called Fossil Fuel Phase Out and a Just Transition from California to the Amazon on Thursday at 3 p.m. in the Goldman Theater at the Brower Center in Berkeley. Hi, Leila. Thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Good morning and thank you.
Thank you. We are also joined by Artie Maingun, director of the Restorative Food Systems Program at Bioneers, a nonprofit that highlights solutions for restoring people and the planet. Artie's first experience in agriculture was as a farm worker picking peaches in West Virginia and tobacco in Ontario. He has spent decades working with farmers, indigenous leaders, and food justice advocates on how to create healthier, more resilient food systems. Artie Maingun was a member of the Santa Cruz GE subcommittee that led to a precautionary moratorium on growing genetically engineered crops in Santa Cruz County. Artie Maingun will be moderating a discussion called How Farming Affects the Nutritional Quality of Food and Human Health on Thursday at 3 p.m. at the Magnus Museum in Berkeley. On Friday at 4:45, he'll moderate a discussion about regenerative landscaping. That'll take place in the Golden Bear Room at Hotel Shattuck Plaza. And I will be in conversation with the Lever founder, David Sirota, on Thursday at 4:45, also in the Golden Bear Room at Hotel Shattuck Plaza. You can get a 20% discount for the Bioneers Conference with the code 360B20. That's 360B20. Hi, Artie. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Great to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank you both for your important work. I want to ask you before we dive in and talk about Bioneers about the DSmog report we're going to be talking about in the second half of the show. Investigative reporter Ray Tackver wrote a piece called Trump Has Launched an Unprecedented Assault on the Environment. Where is the pushback? She writes that even though Trump is doing so much damage to the climate, there's been very little pushback from Democrats and climate activists that have long fought for climate justice. I'm thinking the climate activists are so busy fighting ICE that it's just there's so much going on right now. There's also the No Kings protests that are going to be happening later this month. But with the Democratic Party, she says most of them have really gone silent when it comes to climate. She says that Mark Morano, a longtime climate denier or climate enabler, whatever word you choose to use there, said, in my 26 years of being focused on climate, I've never seen anything like this. Trump is gutting everything they stood for. Billionaires are silent. Democrats in Congress have been silent. Climate activists, there's been no pushback on this. So he's specifically talking about what's going on in the United States. Leila, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this.
Well, I could, yes, I agree that there's a tax everywhere. I think that's the reality, is the Trump administration is has gutted our environmental laws, our climate protections. We've as a climate denier, has gotten the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement, which is disastrous. And it's not just disastrous for, the United States, but for the entire world. And it's having gone to the Global Climate Summit in Brazil last fall, we really saw that, we can't count on U.S. leadership. We have to count on global leadership, and we have to count on subnational leadership, and we have to count on civil society. And I would say where, maybe it feels like, people aren't pushing back. I think we're pushing back in different ways. We are pushing back in the streets on the attacks from, environment to immigrant rights to women's rights. But I think also we're pushing back in with the legal cases. We're up against so much with this administration. So I think there's other in during these kinds of dark times, we have to look at other forms of organizing, including legal strategies and including elections, which I think a lot of people are focusing on right now.
And I'd love to talk with you later on about what we can learn from the activist in the Amazon, because on your Instagram page, you have so many incredible videos of activists taking on multinational corporations. So I'd love to talk with you about that later in the show. Artie, what would you like to add about where the pushback is to Trump's unprecedented assault on the environment?
Yeah, I think one of the tragedies of the multiple crisis that's been created by this administration is that the real issues have really been pushed behind and don't make the headlines anymore, because every day it's a new crisis. So I agree with Leila. I think it's civil society. I think the grassroots, despite the dysfunction at the federal level, the grassroots is alive and well and creative. The work that I am doing is really around the intersection between climate and agriculture. The regenerative agriculture movement is in its very early stages, but is gaining a lot of attention. And I think it's an area where different political views can be mediated, where people can find some common ground. These farmers are in crisis like just about anyone else, and they need a new way. And regenerative agriculture offers them the ability to get rid of the toxins and start to use a more nature-based approach to farming. And ultimately, as there's early research showing that foods grown in a regenerative fashion can be actually healthier for you.
Can you tell us what is regenerative agriculture? We're going to have to do a show about this.
It's a good question, and there are different definitions floating out there. The only codified definition is regenerative organic certified. It's led by the Rodale Institute, and they have some very, very specific standards that they go by, which include using no-till, using cover crops. There's a list of keeping your bare ground covered, things like that. So mimicking nature's way of doing things. Old growth forests and the deep fertility of the prairies, we're not using pesticides and fertilizers. Nature was building these things in a very self-sufficient, regenerative cycle. So we're mimicking nature. There are other people using the word regenerative that are not necessarily using the same standards as the regenerative organic standard. But if they are stepping incrementally into these practices, then that's a good thing as well.
This is such an important issue because you're going to be talking about regenerative landscaping at the Bioneers Conference, March 27th, 4:45. And you're also going to be talking about how farming affects the nutritional quality of food and human health. More than 2 billion people globally suffer from micronutrient deficiencies, and several USDA studies show that there have been significant declines in essential nutrients in a number of food crops over the past 50 years because of industrialized agriculture. But there's research showing that healthy farm soils increase the nutrient density of plants, which implies that authentic regenerative farming practices can reverse this degenerative 50-year trend. So tell us more about this and what this new research is showing.
So conventional agriculture really, their approach is kind of war against nature, pesticides, herbicides. Side means kill, right? Regenerative agriculture is about more life, more biology, and taking a more ecological approach, right? And as we do that, we reestablish the symbiotic relationship between plants, and particularly the plant root, and the life in the soil that is bringing those micronutrients that you mentioned to the plant. When you put fertilizers, you pump up plants with fertilizers, it short circuits that system. Plants no longer need to rely on their allies, their beneficial microbial allies in the soil, and they just suck up soluble fertilizers. So we get big plants, big juicy plants that are nutritionally deficient.
Well, if you'd like to learn more about this, these are such important issues. We will definitely do shows. Artie Maingun will be moderating a discussion called How Farming Affects the Nutritional Quality of Food and Human Health, Thursday at 3 p.m. at the Magnus Museum in Berkeley as part of the Bioneers Conference. On Friday at 4:45, he'll moderate a discussion about regenerative landscaping. That'll take place in the Golden Bear Room at Hotel Shattuck Plaza. Bioneers runs from Thursday through Saturday. You can get a 20% discount with the code 360B20. Artie Maingun is director of the Restorative Food Systems Program at Bioneers. We're also joined by Leila Salazar Lopez, executive director of Amazon Watch. They work to protect and defend the Amazon rainforest in solidarity with indigenous and forest peoples. Leila will be on a panel called Fossil Fuel Phase Out and a Just Transition from California to the Amazon Thursday at 3 p.m. in the Goldman Theater at the Brower Center in Berkeley. Let's spend some time talking about the state of the Amazon. The Amazon's health is directly tied to the success of any global initiative to address climate change, but it's at a tipping point. So can you give us an update, Leila? Because there's so much going on, what is the Amazon currently facing right now? And can you tell us about some of the multinational corporations that indigenous peoples are protesting and fighting against?
Sure, and thank you. I want to back up and just acknowledge that, first of all, happy spring to everyone. The spring started off with the International Day of the Forest on Saturday, and yesterday was the International Day of Water. And I want to start there because that is what the Amazon is. It is our world's largest tropical rainforest. It is the host of the largest tropical rainforest on our planet and also the source of the world's largest river. And as as our elders have said in the movement and throughout time, water is life. And without this water, without these forests, without the forests, we will not have the rain clouds over the Amazon, which produce the water. So it's all interconnected. And the Amazon rainforest, while it's so massive and so vast, it is very delicate and very much under threat by many different forces, including extractive industries, oil and mining, including logging, both legal and illegal, including infrastructure development. That means hydroelectricity and road building, which leads to massive deforestation and degradation of the forests and its integrity to survive. And many different threats also, including fire. Fire is actually one of the leading causes of forest destruction around the world to this today. Not only tropical forests, but temperate forests as well. And that is caused both in part by intentional people setting the forests on fire to make way for agribusiness, which is also a major, major threat and actually the leading cause of deforestation and degradation in the Brazilian Amazon. But the fire also is caused by climate change. So it's a positive feedback loop of both, you know, the fire being caused by intentional and also by drought and climate change. And, you know, all of these threats combined lead the Amazon rainforest to have, you know, to be degraded and deforested near 30%. So global scientists and scientists who have studied the Amazon for decades, including Carlos Nobre and Antonio Nobre and the late Thomas Lovejoy, said that you know, when the forest reaches over 20% deforestation and degradation, it is probable that it will reach a tipping point. And the tipping point as the point at which an ecological system collapses and is no longer able to function the way that it has traditionally. And that is where the Amazon is right now. The Amazon rainforest is not nearing a tipping point. It is at a tipping point. And the only way to stop the tipping point from getting worse is by stopping deforestation and degradation. So that means stopping and rolling back these threats. And it also means reforesting and regenerating the forests. There needs to be a massive scale regeneration of reforestation of the Amazon. Some of the threats, one of the major calls by indigenous peoples and allies like Amazon Watch, one of the major calls that we're calling for is to stop the extraction of the Amazon and to make the Amazon free from extraction, and particularly fossil fuel extraction and mining, both legal and illegal, because these are the major threats to, in particular, the Western Amazon, but increasingly to the Brazilian Amazon as well. Right now, there's plans and proposals in Ecuador, in the Ecuadorian Amazon. There are plans for drilling in thousands of acres, up to 8 million acres of tropical rainforest. Indigenous peoples' territories are up for auction for new oil development. This is the opposite of what needs to be done. We've already seen the death and destruction by fossil fuel extraction in the northern Ecuadorian Amazon, in the northern Peruvian Amazon, and the drilling and the dumping by companies like California-based Chevron. Well, not anymore, but California, Texaco, now Chevron, was the initial developer of crude oil development in the Ecuadorian Amazon. And that led to the historic case against Chevron, which was actually won by the indigenous and campesino communities, but Chevron has failed to pay a single penny of the $8 billion judgment that was ruled against them in 2012. We continue to pressure Chevron and other companies who have caused environmental and climate justice disasters in the Amazon. But another way that this is particularly important to California is that currently Ecuador is the biggest, the oil that is exported from Ecuador the oil that's exported, the majority comes here to California. Over 50% of the oil that is exported comes to California. It goes to the refineries here in the Bay, to Richmond. It goes to El Segundo Refinery. And so we've been working to change that because, you know, California has historically been a climate leader. And, you know, that could be a whole other show to talk about the contradictions, the leadership and the contradictions. But what we can say is that we do not need to import oil from the Amazon rainforest to feed our addiction to oil. If we want to be a climate leader here in California, and we are committed to a just transition, one place to start is by phasing out oil from the Amazon in our refineries, which also then indirectly means in our cars.
This is so interesting, Leila. I'm guessing that a lot of people really have no idea where their gas comes from. And so you're saying that, can you repeat those numbers? How much of the oil that's coming to California is coming from Ecuador?
Over 50% of the oil that's exported from Ecuador. So some of the oil that's drilled in the Amazon, where Chevron was, you know, decades ago, some of the oil, you know, from there and even from the Yosemite National Park, the most biologically diverse ecosystem on our planet, there's oil drilling there. Some of that oil stays in Ecuador or it's you know, exported to other countries in South America. But 50% of what is exported comes to California. And it's mixed in our refineries with our oil. You know, California produces a lot of oil, right? Anybody who drives... anyone who lives in the Central Valley in Kern County or drives up and down any of our major highways, 101 or I-5, you'll see oil drilling. Or if you're in Los Angeles, you'll see drilling in Los Angeles. That oil is mixed with various forms of oil, including Amazon oil, to produce the oil that we need for transport. That's one of the things that we keep hearing from our government in California, that it's not easy to get off Amazon oil because they need the heavy crude to mix with the fracked oil and the oil that we get here in California. There is some positive, you know, I don't want to be just, you know, a downer here, but there is some positive movement through a delegation that we had last year and some reports that we produced, including a report called Drilling Towards Disaster, which is on our website at amazonwatch.org. We presented this report and we brought a delegation from the Amazon to the California state capitol. We had a delegation last June. We had many meetings with state senators and policymakers. And that resulted in SR 51, which is a unanimously approved California state resolution to review the imports of crude from the Amazon and an eventual phase out. So our state is committed to phasing out fossil fuels by 2045. And actually this week, before Bioneers, we are going to Sacramento to meet with policymakers to find out what the latest reports and reports are around our energy transition. And then we'll bring updates to Bioneers on Thursday.
Wow, this is so important. This is SR 51, a unanimously approved California state resolution to review imports of crude oil from the Amazon rainforest. Yes. Leila Salazar-Lopez is executive director of Amazon Watch. I wish we had more time with both of you because that is such important information. I also wanted to just quickly talk about the can you help me with this one?
Ferrograu.
Thank you. Mega rail away through the Amazon. I wanted to play a video that is up on the Amazon Watch website just to let people know about this. Can you tell us about this planned industrial railway designed to speed soy and corn exports from the Amazon to global markets?
Sure. It is the antithesis of what Artie is and Mangan is talking about regenerative and local food production. The Ferrograu is a massive industrial railway to transport soy and corn, industrial GMO, pesticide-laden grain from the Cerrado, which is the largest tropical savanna, and the Amazon, the largest tropical rainforest and indigenous territories. This railway, if built, would transport these grains to the port of Santarém, which is on the Tapajós River in the Amazon, to the Cargill port in Santarém. And then it would ship these grains to China and Europe. Just last month, there was a massive show of resistance by indigenous peoples at the Cargill terminal to oppose this agribusiness expansion and this agribusiness destruction on indigenous lands without their consent. They were protesting the Ferrograu, and they were also protesting the Hidrovia, which is this industrial waterway to make it easier for these massive barges to transport these grains on the Tapajós River. And they were specifically asking to revoke Decree 12600. And after 30 days of protests, President Lula and the ministers, Sonia Guajajara, Marina Silva, they agreed to revoke this decree. And while Lula is in office, President Lula is in office, they will not allow these projects to go through.
Oh, wow.
So it was a major, major victory. And, you know, we always say in organizing that, you know, this is a delay. It's not a permanent stop to these projects, but it is a delay that makes a huge difference for the river and for the forests and the people and the climate. And so any delay is a victory, and we celebrated that. And right now, there's actually another mobilization happening on the Xingu River, where the Bellomonte Dam was built. Now, another Canadian mining company called Belo Sun is trying to build one of the world's largest mines on the Xingu River. So the resistance continues, and the resistance is strong, and the resistance is a solution to stop this destruction. And so that's what we support.
And the soy and the corn exports, that would be then fed to animals?
It's for animal feed, primarily, yes.
How much of the deforestation in the Amazon is due to big ag and cattle?
Well, in Brazil alone, it's 90% plus.
Wow.
It's because of agribusiness. The leading cause of deforestation and degradation of the Brazilian Amazon is by agribusiness. And it's, you know, setting fire. You know, President Bolsonaro, the former president, literally encouraged people to set fire to the forests, to indigenous mm-hmm. lands, to make way for cattle grazing in particular. And then there's these industrial agribusiness companies, not just Cargill, ADM, Bunge, Louis Dreyfus, Amaji in Brazil, these huge corporations that are in control of the Brazilian Congress. Mining and agribusiness control the Brazilian Congress. Mm-hmm. And that is why they are getting away with this. But the communities are pushing back.
Is there any way to know how much, given that things are so globalized now, how much of that meat ends up in the United States?
You know, I don't know the exact percentage, but I can get back to you. You know, there is a, you know, Brazil and the United States, usually historically, the United States was the biggest soy producer, the biggest meat producer. But Brazil has given the United States some serious competition. And a lot of that meat that is grown, raised in Brazil, primarily by a company called JBS, it stays in Brazil and in South America. And some does reach the United States and other countries. But also, you know, the United States is a massive meat producer as well.
Right.
So I don't know the exact percentage, to be totally honest with you.
Well, we should definitely do a show about this. And talking about how it's all so connected, I'm reading from a piece in the New York Times over the weekend. Jack Healy writes, more than 3,000 union workers on the High Plains of Colorado walked off the job from one of the largest meatpacking plants in the country, hoping to use cracks in Trump's economy to win higher wages and better working conditions. The workers at the JBS plant in Greeley, Colorado, staging the country's first meatpacking strike in 40 years, say their pay for grueling, dangerous jobs has not kept pace with the soaring cost of living. They can no longer afford the steaks that they slice and pack during shifts that leave their shoulders aching. So, Layla, all of this is just so connected.
And it's the same company I just mentioned, JBS.
Right. Yep. Well, thank you so much for bringing all of this information to our show. We'd love to have both of you back to have longer conversations about these issues. Layla Salazar Lopez is executive director of Amazon Watch. She will be on a panel at Bioneers called Fossil Fuel Phase Out and a Just Transition from California to the Amazon on Thursday at 3 p.m. in the Goldman Theater at the Brower Center in Berkeley. Artie Mangan is director of the Restorative Food Systems Program at Bioneers. He'll be moderating a discussion called How Farming Affects the Nutritional Quality of Food and Human Health on Thursday at 3 p.m. at the Magnus Museum in Berkeley. On Friday at 4:45, he'll moderate a discussion about regenerative landscape. That'll take place in the Golden Bear Room at Hotel Shattuck Plaza. Artie and Layla, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rose. Thank you very much.
See you this week.
And I'll be in conversation at the Bioneers Conference with the Lever founder David Sirota on Thursday at 4:45 in the Golden Bear Room at Hotel Shattuck Plaza. You can get a 20% discount on the conference with the code 360B20. 360B20. Coming up after a break, we will speak with investigative journalist for DSmog, Ray Tochver, about her piece, Trump Has Launched an Unprecedented Assault on the Environment. Where's the Pushback? This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. We'll be back after this.